have too many words today. There's just too much to say. Some of you will be relieved and others disappointed that I'm not going to talk about elephants. But I probably will be talking about the elephant in the room. The Soul Matters packet reminds us this month of Jan Richardson's blessing for belonging. You hardly knew how hungry you were to be gathered in, to receive the welcome that invited you to enter entirely. You began to breathe again. You learned to sing. But the deal with this blessing is that it will not leave you alone. It will not let you linger. This blessing asks you to leave, not because it has tired of you, but because it desires for you to become the sanctuary that you have found. I don't think Richardson is speaking of physical space in this blessing. I don't, especially when she prods us toward leaving. The blessing is asking us to move over, to make space, to widen the circle, or maybe to let go of the circle altogether so that all have a place to belong. All know that they are wholly whole and loved, that all are included, to become the sanctuary we have found. Now more than ever, we are called to be in solidarity, to be sanctuary, to create and recreate it. The hard part is remembering. If we find ourselves being invited to linger in the comfort of the familiar, if we find ourselves resistant to change, that's a signal we're wanting to keep this belonging to ourselves rather than sharing it. We may have been welcomed with a members only card, but then we soon start to create a circle that doesn't allow others in. Closed circles don't just set us apart, our Soul Matters packet reminds us this month. They also sit us above, but they also keep us small. And maybe this is why Richardson's blessing is so intent on not leaving us alone. It knows that we only grow when the circle does. Circles that keep others out also keep the air out. No one inside a closed circle truly sings. They only suffocate slowly. It's all one big reminder that the true blessing of inclusion is not that you get to come inside the circle. It's that you get to participate in expanding it. As the circle grows, so do we. Inclusion is a deeper form of welcome. In the last year, some people in this congregation have participated in a Wednesday night class called Date with Death Club. A part of that class took some time each week to consider preemptive radical inclusion. It's been mentioned several times from this pulpit since that class, even as the class was happening. And the concept has spread to other aspects of congregational life. It asks us to consider who is not at the table, who is not represented, and more importantly, how do we think about including them before they even arrive? My friend Mike Angel is an Episcopalian minister who has served in several different U.S. cities. I met him as a campus minister in San Diego. He helped me get my clergy campus ID and a parking pass, a university email address, and he connected me to Facebook at a time when Facebook was only accessible to those connected to universities. It was a long time ago, y'all. But he included me. He thought about me ahead of time and what I would need. He moved on to the DC area and he served at St. John's near the White House. Yes, that St. John's. Mike tells a story about building a relationship with a homeless man who used to hang out near that church building. You're going to hear this story again in another sermon later on, just so you know. I know that I'll be repeating myself. I'm just giving you a heads up. But this man, Mac, one day said to Mike, "The poor will be with you always," which of course made Mike stop to listen. "The poor will be with you always." Jesus said that. It's quoted in Matthew 26. "The poor will be with you always." But people got it wrong, Mike, Mac said. They got it wrong. It's really a question. Are the poor with you? Do you consider the poor when you are voting? Do you take them with you into boardrooms? Do you consider the poor at city council meetings and board of supervisor meetings? Do you consider the poor when making policies and environmental matters? Are the poor with you? Maybe preemptive radical inclusion at its best. Do we think about how to be inclusive in advance? I think if I ask each one of you who should be included, I would not worry about your answer. I know that you know this. I know that we all know this. But how do we live into this and this inclusive Unitarian Universalist faith in these days and in these times? Because what a week, huh? Sometimes I wonder if inclusion is enough. Because I think inclusion asks us to make people apart. And it asks us to change when new ideas show up. Because, and we do, mostly. If we're going to grow, if we're growing, we're doing that. But I think we have to go beyond to like liberation and decolonization, which ask us not just who has a place at the table and is there a place at the table, but where is the table and who built the table and who paid for the table? And those are the questions I believe that we need to be asking in these days. I think that we know to be inclusive. We know what that means, but I don't know if we're necessarily sure how, what that looks like necessarily in real time beyond welcoming, right? We know how to be welcoming. And I'm not just talking about in this building, right? There are new people near here today who know how to be welcoming of others, you know, probably in your jobs, all of us. How do we do that? How do we take it to a deeper level in religious community? There's a quote from the recent movie Conclave that says, "The church is not the past. It is what we do next. It is what we do. Church is what we do next." Church, where we practice what it means to be human, where we build relationships so that when times are hard, as they are in these days, we have people we trust, people we rely on, people to be in solidarity with and do the work of justice with. We are not a social club, though we do social things. That's how we build community. That's how we connect. But these times call us to do what's next, to be bold and brave. We cannot stick our heads in the sand. We have to know what's going on in these days, and we get to respond as people of faith. We get to hold sacred space for people to be here. We get to be open and welcoming, and we get to include others, not just on Sundays, but fully welcome into all of this community. Here are some practical things that we can do. I'm not going to be able to name everything, but I'm going to start here. Basic, in this building, we can offer pronoun, and we do offer pronoun stickers for our name tags. You can argue the point about whether or not they change the world. But if one transgender or see it as prayers going up, all that smoke. If one transgender or non-binary person walks through those doors and mentally tracks that we do pronouns here, and it helps them feel safe and know they have a home here, isn't it worth that? The next thing is, we have to face tyranny. So I'm putting it together a discussion group for the book on tyranny, which we'll read and then talk about. Please attend and let me know that you're interested, because we may need to do it at a time when parents are available. I definitely want parents to be part of this. We can discuss the possibilities of both online and in person. And if you've read this book and you're willing to participate or lead it, please let me know that. In an effort to keep us informed, I'm going to be setting up a more secure way to communicate for those things that may be more sensitive. This will be opt-in. You will not automatically be added, but I will let you know. We'll still use Facebook and other social media for advertising our services and events. But as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez writes, not all of the productive activity can be broadcast online. She reminds us that tyranny is eroded by a sea of small acts. Everything matters. Keep going, she says. One of the best things we can do right now, if we are people of privilege, is to speak out against what's happening in our government. The other thing I think we can do is offer a de-escalation and bystander intervention training so that we know what to do when people are targeted. If you have ideas of what we can do and how we can be in these days, please talk to me. We knew it would be bad. We just didn't know the form that it would take exactly. Ilya Prigozhin, a Nobel Prize-winning chemist, writes that when a complex system is far from equilibrium, small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos have the capacity to shift this entire system to a higher order. I'm going to read that again. When a complex system is far from equilibrium, small islands of coherence in a sea of chaos have the capacity to shift the entire system to a higher order. Overwhelm is a tactic. We're going to lean on each other. We're going to stay grounded. We're going to do what's next. We're going to include people preemptively and radically. We're going to laugh together and cry together and give and grow and be, all while resisting what they're throwing up. We're going to carry others over the sidewalk cracks. And then we're going to step on those cracks when other things are more important, because that's what we do. We're a small island of coherence, and we can be part of shifting the entire system to a higher order. A meme this week reminded me that crying releases hormones, releases stress hormones, swearing increases pain tolerance. I recommend it. Anger motivates us to solve problems. Silence and smiles aren't the only way to respond to pain. Sometimes it's good to howl. So we're going to keep singing and shouting and howling when we need to keep going, we keep going. Amen. We're in this together.